Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. So glad you're with us wherever you are. If you're joining us on television here in Santa Barbara, California area, we welcome you at TVSB. And of course, so many of you are joining us from around the world at the other platforms. GoodLifeTelevision.org is one, and YouTube channel is one, and the social media platforms is another one. And then we have the podcast. So that's become increasingly popular over the last couple of years. And so you can search Good Life Conversations is what you want to search on any podcast platform. And you can find us. You can find all these fantastic long form interviews at the YouTube channel. We also break them up into what we call power clips. We'd love to have you check those out. I think you'll be encouraged. People from all walks of life. I've been so blessed to sit in this seat and have the opportunity to talk to just some amazing people. And so we're grateful. We're brought to you, as always, by Bunnin Chevrolet. We're grateful for our friends at Bunnin, and we're grateful for you. So thank you for joining us. And I'm really excited about my guest today. He's the New York Times bestselling author. His name is Gary Harpst. Gary, welcome.
Dean, looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's really great to have you. I've been reading about you, and I want to start with kind of just you and your own journey, which is typically where I start with people, just so we get a kind of a sense of kind of the person behind this work. Tell us just a little bit about yourself, kind of where you grew up, your family, and then so forth.
In Northwestern Ohio on a farm, and my parents were part of the Depression era generation. So that definitely influenced the environment I grew up in, conservative, not too risk-taking. And when I got to college, I was very interested in computer science, but also business. Somehow the marriage of those two always seemed interesting to me. And I became serious about my faith in the mid-20s. And by 30, I had started a business with a couple of other gentlemen. It was a software business in 1980. So I'm in my fifth decade, believe it or not, of being a CEO. And the three of us were in a Bible study talking about ways to live out your faith. So it wasn't just a Sunday thing. It was an integrated part of your life. And my older partner always felt like running businesses was a good way to test your faith and integrate what you were doing. And so he kind of stirred the three of us. All three of us ended up starting this software business. Little did we know that 10 months later, IBM would introduce the PC. And we were 10 months ahead of that. And then the world exploded in a wonderful way for us. And so we were on a rapid 20-year. We had to grow 50% a year just to keep up, you know.
Wow.
And so that kind of contributes a little bit to the book Chaos that I just recently wrote, because we had 20 years of chaos. So,
yeah, wow.
Yeah. So we eventually sold the business to our largest competitor, and within 30 days, we were negotiating with Microsoft to buy the whole thing, not me, but the CEO of the surviving entity. And so that it was eventually sold to Microsoft. And my wife told me to get out of the house and find something else to do. So I started what I'm working on now.
Yeah. Talk about that. Talk a little bit about what's happened since.
What was really interesting to me, I'm an analyst kind of person. And so I'm always trying to figure out how things work. And I noticed in our rapid growth years, Solomon Software was the name of the first business we started, named after Solomon in the Bible for wisdom. And I just noticed in our growth, we went from one person to 500 people or not quite. And our partners, we had 1,000 partners who were selling our products and services. And they were growing from 3 people to 10 to 20 to 50 to 100. And I saw over and over and over again, we would make mistakes and then they would make the same mistakes. And you just saw this pattern of challenges that emerge in organizations that are growing. And so when I sold the business, I found myself thinking about, is there some way to help small and mid-sized organizations avoid some of those pitfalls? not, you can't life, you can't eliminate the pitfalls in life. But so that was the genesis of a business called Six Disciplines that I've been in for the last 20 years almost. But in about a year and a half ago, I could just tell God was leading me in a different way and pointing out to us that we had focused on process. We're software people, so we tend to think about how to automate and streamline things. And God began to nudge on me. He said, okay, you got the process stuff, but you don't have the people stuff right. And I had written some books before, did not want to write another book. And somebody called me out unsolicited and said, would you consider it? And I said, no, I'm not doing another book. And then, but I did start to pray about it. And I said, God, if you want me to write another book, you are going to have to make this really obvious because I don't want to do it. And about 30 minutes later, the phone rang and Wiley, unsolicited, called me and asked me to write a book. Now, Wiley just, at least that doesn't happen to me to have a significant publisher call me and ask me to write. And I said, okay, God. And I told him, I said, I will not write this book unless I can really inject and be honest about my faith in it. And they said, no, that's not a problem. And so that's what the last year I wrote the book. And that book, I think, was really more for me because it helped me distill 4 decades of leadership and studying the word and really helped me to see, I think, a message of hope for business leaders and believers in general in the current condition the world's in.
Yeah. That, well, and I was saying before we came on, what a timely book this is. I want to just read this a little bit from here, from this, I think it's a press release, but in a 2023 Business Leaders Outlook survey from JP Morgan Chase, 91% of business leaders say they continue to face challenges from rising inflation, and only 8% are optimistic about the global economy, down from 34.4% just last year. So in that, obviously there's a lot of pessimism out there. There's a lot of uncertainty, I would say, out there. What is your hope for this book in terms of addressing what's actually going on in the world?
The book is, the main premise of the book, it's a biblical perspective of why we're here and what's going on in the world. And so the first premise of the book is that chaos is actually not an evil in and of itself. Chaos is actually unformed resource there for us to use. And the basis for saying that, that chaos is not our enemy, it's our purpose, it comes from Genesis chapter 1. And in there is an account of the creation story. And later in the chapter, God says, I'm going to create you in my image so that you can have dominion in it. The word dominion doesn't mean dominate people. It means to rule over, organize, have control over. Well, at the point he has said that, the only thing he has revealed about himself is what's in the first 18 verses. And the very first verse of the Bible says, I'll ask people, what did God create first? And that are familiar with the Bible, and they'll say, well, I think it was light. And I said, read it again, and you'll see that what he created first was chaos. It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and they were void and without form. And so he actually intentionally showed us something there, I believe, that he, you start with chaos, and then he subsequently brought order to that chaos. And then he said, you are made just like me. And so the message of the book to people is, when you feel like things are completely out of control, whether it's in your personal life or your business life, step back and realize that God created you and designed you to bring order out of chaos. And the rest of the book gives some principles to follow in figuring out how to do that.
And I want to get to some of those principles in a second, but what a powerful thought. Did this just come to you? Like, I've never thought of that.
Well, it did just come to me. And that's, I don't, you know, you, people tell you, well, God told me this and that, and you don't know quite what they mean, you know, and he doesn't write on the wall for me or speak audibly like he has done in sometimes in the past. But I notice when I'm in the Bible and studying, for some reason, he will connect the dots. I'll be reading a verse and he'll say, did you think about this verse? And he'll sort of connect things that I had not thought of. And I don't take credit for this. I know it's just the way God shows up in me. And some of those things in Genesis, I didn't see myself until I undertook the book. And then I felt like God was showing me something, a message to give to people.
Yeah, that's really powerful. So, yeah, because I think oftentimes, I mean, I've thought of that in terms of, you know, that God is a God of order. We always say that. I think that's true. But what you're talking about here is really agents to bring order.
Yeah, that, I think so. And, you know, later on, I'm a designer. I'm sorry. I'm an engineer. I speak and think that way. And engineers, when they're building something, the first thing they ask are, what are the requirements? You know, if I want a house, the first thing I'll say, well, how many bedrooms do you want? How many bathrooms do you want? How big does it need to be? And so those are requirements. And then once you have the requirements straight, you start designing. Well, Genesis told us when God created us what the requirements he followed in creating us. He said, I am creating you in such a way that you will be able to have dominion over this earth that I've given you. Later on in Genesis, he tells us actually how we're designed to do that. So Genesis 1 tells us the requirements. Genesis 6 and 7 tell us how, what our actual makeup is to be able to rule over the earth. And so it's a fascinating discovery, I think.
That is really fascinating. Yeah. And so let's go into, and I want to read this one quote. God's first act was to create chaos, and then he began to transform that chaos step by step into the place where we live. Let's talk a little bit about the principles. So just grab one that comes to mind in terms of as you teach people what to do, practically speaking, in, you know, the environment that we may find ourselves, and it certainly could get worse before it gets better. Start with a little bit of a principle that comes to mind.
I want to talk about two, and I'll segue first to the way in the story of Noah, God reveals that we're designed so that we have a desire, a source of desire. It's often referred to as heart in the Bible. And then we have a mind or a place of reason, which is referred to as something separate from the heart. So our heart gives us a desire. Our mind gives us a way to think about that desire and what to do about it and whether to follow the desire or not. So reason should rule over desire, but desire is what gets things started. If you don't have desire, there's nothing for reason to do. Huh. And then once you have reason, he gives us what we call imagination. I forget who first stated this, but it said there's always two creations, the creation in our mind, and then the actions that lead to the creation. So every time I have a desire and I think about what I want to do with it, eventually I form a solution in my mind. Okay, I'm going to get up today. I think I'll go to the coffee shop and get a coffee. Well, that's, you're imagining that you're going to go to the coffee shop. What do? You get your coat, get your keys, and you go do it. So we don't even notice it, but this is the way our mind works. And the Bible tells us this is the way it works. And the last step in the process, the four-step process, is action. So here's a principle. The principle is, if you want to conquer chaos, you have to recognize the relationship between your desires and your reason. And here's what I mean. If I pursue my desires without reason, what happens? I ultimately end up with more chaos.
Right.
Right. And you can take a young child and see it. And if you don't bring some order, some reason to, I'm going to run in the street without looking, you end up with more chaos. And so principle number one is you have to conquer chaos, you first have to decide what you want. You have to pick a purpose. And then you use your reason to say, is that a good purpose? What are the choices for pursuing that purpose? What do I need to do it? And so conquering chaos always, always, always starts with purpose.
Wow. Take a second or talk about another one.
Okay. So everybody likes to talk about purpose, but what they don't, like so many things, there's way more to the story than is on the surface. We say, well, what's my purpose? Well, as a young man and out of college, I have a purpose. I want to get a job, but I also have another purpose. I want to get married. I want to have a family. And then I read the Bible and I think, well, God has some things he wants me to do. And so pretty soon you start to have multiple purposes and you have to begin to sort through these things. And if you, for example, if I have a purpose to honor God and I marry somebody that does not have that purpose, I've immediately set myself up for how in the world am I going to reconcile the fact that I've got somebody close to me that I've become one with who wants to go in this direction, and my relationship with God is pulling me in this. I've immediately set up attention. I'm not saying that you should never do that. God may lead you to do that. But so sorting out purpose, like if you take a job, you need to understand what that business is in, what their purpose is, and make sure you fit that purpose. Because if you don't get that right, no amount of good work is going to ever satisfy you. See, are you following the logic of that?
Yeah.
So that's an expansion of this. And this, by the way, is why the book is, I've got a copy of the book here. You know, the subtitle is Leading Yourself and Leading Others. You can't really lead somebody else until you can lead yourself.
Right.
And leadership in its essence starts with the ability to sort out all these conflicting purposes and get them aligned.
Wow. So true. Yeah. I think about leadership a lot, and I know that that's something that you obviously think about a lot. And I think about it actually right now. We had a meeting in my office yesterday where there was 10 of us in the room, including several CEOs. And we were talking about, we were talking about principles, and we were talking about leadership, and we were talking about, you know, specific challenges, specific opportunities, and so forth. And maybe people say this all the time, and it probably has been said for decades or more, but in my opinion, there is no greater moment that I can imagine where we need a new generation of leaders who are following Jesus. And it, practically speaking, you know, what that looks like is such a game changing, you know, thing. So when reflect on that for a second, they say every, you know, I've said it many times too, you know, I really believe everything rises and falls at many levels with leadership. I think it's in Proverbs, you know, what happens when you have bad leaders and what happens when you have good leaders? It's really important, isn't it?
Incredibly important. I'm smiling because the way you frame the question about the sort of the season we are in as a country, we have what we call a round table, my partner and I with our five kids, and I ought to know how many children I have, I guess. the five of us and two of them, we were talking this morning about the same topic, about what is the difference between doing good things, helping people. Like a physician who heals someone is doing good work. But there is a difference between just helping somebody physically and then introducing them to Christ. And we are at a place in our country where a lot of people are doing things that on an isolated basis might look like they're good things, but we are losing the very sense of who we are in terms of Christ followers. And so I personally am with you. We're changing our business strategy to go work with people that are believers at the top of the organization who want to transform their organization to be more kingdom building. And what I mean by kingdom building is to love on people to the point that they earn the right to share the gospel with them. And this is not my idea. I was talking to, reading a story about Coca-Cola Consolidated. I don't know if you've ever heard any of their story.
No, no.
The way Coke, the parent company, distributes their products is through independent businesses called distributors. And actually, those businesses are bigger than Coca-Cola. And so one of the bottlers in the United States has 17,000 people, just one of them. And what they do is take the Coke serum and turn them into products. And they're the ones that deliver your Coke cases to the grocery store. Well, years ago, the CEO of that company took over as a young man, and he was a Christian, and he decided that the company was hollow. It was hollow from doing certain things financially, but just completely hollow in terms of values. And he set about to change the culture. And over a period of 25 years, they've transformed the organization. And they have so many people in Bible studies, and they look for people that don't believe in Christianity to hire them, because they know that they'll love on them and they'll come to know Christ. And for me, I think anything else, if we're not working on bringing people into the kingdom and teaching them what God's spirit inside of us can do, everything else is kind of like shuffling chairs on the deck of the Titanic. You know,
right.
we have got to change the core values in this country. And that we can yell and scream at people, it won't do a bit of good. We just have to get out and tell the good news of the gospel, you know.
So true. I believe that business leaders, you know, CEOs, presidents, or not executive directors of nonprofits, I believe they just have the greatest opportunity sitting right before them that we haven't really figured out. I was talking with a friend about this the other day. We were saying, have you ever been to a church? You know, we have our youth ministry, we have our children's ministry, we have our women's ministry, we have our men's ministry. Have you ever been to a church that has a business ministry where it's like targeting, saying, hey, you don't need to walk 10 feet if you're an executive, if you're in a corporate suite, to find your ministry opportunity. You've got a congregation,
yeah.
Actually a captive one,
yeah.
Because they're drawing a paycheck. They're right there in front of you, and seeing it differently is like, what an opportunity we have to love people.
I'm a little embarrassed that it's taken me so long. I agree with what you just said. And I honestly could tell you, I don't think I thought that way 5 years ago. I mean, I was a believer and I wrote checks to people that were doing really good things, but really seeing business as a platform for kingdom building, I wasn't there. And most people my age would be retiring. I think God's calling me off the bench here to say, no, you're not going to wind down here. You're going to wind up. to the very point of what you're saying, I think there's a lot of people out there that want to do more. They just don't know how. And
yeah.
Think like this book is a little bit of a blueprint for what to do to start moving in that direction. And boy, what a powerful force. I mean, God created work. Work is not a four-letter word. It really,
right.
You know, it's we come to know Him when we work and use what He's created us for. That's a form of worship.
You have an opportunity to create and change and build an environment for people. People go to the office or go to the workplace. I mean, obviously, some people are doing remote now, but people spend a lot of their life in the workplace. When
no,
you have, speaking of dominion, Gary, you have dominion over that place, right?
That's right.
And I mean, So you and if you've been given that authority by God, in my opinion, you've been given that position. You don't, I mean, what a great opportunity it is.
Don't want to squander it. Nope.
Yeah. I mean, we were going through this group that I talked about yesterday, this kind of the CEO group. We're going through love. What does love look like?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're literally, it's love is patient. Love is kind. Love, mm-hmm. you know, keep no record of wrong, not proud, not rude. So we just started yesterday with love is patient. So all we're doing is working on love is patient for the next month. And you think about the ramifications. I mean, not only do we have the opportunity, but we have a blueprint in essence. I mean, we have, God is telling us, God, you know, love, which is not really a what, it's a who. God's telling us what he's like and say, you know, and then we have the opportunity to take that into to the workplace and say, what would it look like to have a culture where there was patience? You know, and guys like me, maybe guys like you, type A doers. I don't think we're known for our patience.
No, that's not the first thing that people think of.
most guys like me, most corporate suite guys, they want it yesterday, and they don't want any excuses. And I'm not saying that, you know, obviously we need accountability and all that, but a kindness, a patient spirit is, I mean, just thinking about all the different aspects of that are game changing. So you're thinking, Gary, about a vision for kind of marketplace executive ministry kind of thing? Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, it's broader than that. You know, I really think what God does, he causes you to be a steward of what you have. You know, so if you think through your life, you've got, at your stage of life, my stage of life, I've got certain assets, investments, I've got family, I've got people I know, and I have a lifetime of expertise from building certain kinds of things. And I believe what God is leading me to do is to create a platform for small businesses that develop leaders that know how to grow, to avoid some of those mistakes of going from 5 people to 500, to help them just do the basic blocking and tackling, how they set goals, how they track results and do all those sorts of things, plus teach them ways they might do kingdom building while they're doing that. So it's a combination of the old technology world I lived in with the new idea of there are ways, there's so many examples I'm finding of people who figured this out and have done it and built a great business, Hobby Lobby, you know, those kinds of things.
Right, right.
And I think if we can marry some of the technology ideas with the biblical vision building, we get a synergy that we haven't had before. We have a good way to run a business and some ideas of how to aim that business in a different direction.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And then the idea that you don't have to choose one or the other, like the idea that you can have an excellent, growing, thriving, efficient enterprise while loving and caring for people. You know, it's amazing. I have a friend who is down in Dallas, Texas, has a plastics company. He always posts on LinkedIn. This guy is just on fire, young guy. And he's talking about all this. He's saying they went from 13 million top line to 50 million, 50. His tagline is, work doesn't have to suck. He's building a culture of love, and he says we got rid of, you know, some of the egos and whatnot. We're paying people more. He said we've drastically increased pay, more holidays, more time off, getting to know the people better. Outlines kind of all the way, and then they're caring for people. They take people offsite, every employee for one-on-one check-in about their life, how they're doing. He's doing all this, and then the top line's gone from 13 million to 50 million at the same time. And I'm going,
at the same time. Well, I like sharing those stories because they light my fire and say, oh, maybe I could do something like this. And I would like to share one back.
Yeah.
A guy, this was a fellow who started a property management business 30 some years ago. And I like the older stories because they tell me what happens decades later. So here, if I'm 30 years old, I can say, oh, I could do this. Well, he buys apartments, big apartment buildings. And he's got properties all over the United States. And he might buy an apartment building with 1,000 people or 1,000 apartments in it, big. But he said he didn't want to write checks. He wanted his business itself to be a platform for kingdom building. So he decided years ago that for every property he bought, he would give one apartment to a couple for free if they would donate 50 hours a month to kingdom building in that apartment complex. That's the only decision he made. And he would hire a lot of times. He said a lot of times there were a couple in seminary or something like that. They have a faith background and a heart to do this. And he's been doing this for 30 years. And the average turnover in most apartments in the United States, 78% turnover every year. His is 38. same idea. Yep. He didn't do this to make more money.
Right.
He did it for the right reasons, and the money came later.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. What's funny, he says, I have investors come to him. He says, I don't care about your faith, but I sure do like your return on investment.
Right. Seek first the kingdom of God. Yeah. Harry Harps is the founder of LeadFirst.ai, has been recognized by Leadership Excellence Magazine as one of the top 100 thought leaders in management and leadership. Co-founded, as he mentioned, and became CEO of Solomon Software, and now he has written another book. This is not his first, but hope you'll check it out. The book is Built to Beat Chaos, Biblical Wisdom for Leading Yourself and Others. A timely word from Gary. Gary, thank you for writing it. I'm going to read it. I can't wait. What a wonderful ministry God's given you. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Dean. I love what you do, and we need more stories, and you're helping get these the hope, right?
Yep.
These,
right.
Hey, we can make a difference. Every time I turn around, I see somebody who's winning and doing something and think, I can do that. And I'm going
That's
to do
right.
it.
Yeah. That's right. Amen.
Amen to
thank
that.
You, thank you, sir. Great to have you.
Great to have you too. Blessings.
Yep. And thank you all for watching. We'll see you next time.